Here in the first hour of Issues, Etc., we're going to take up a subject that I've not heard anyone address the issue of 32 years of Roe v. Wade in exactly this way. Our first guest, Dr. Sue Abramidis, is going to talk. We're going to talk about Roman Catholic bishops and pro-choice legislators and voters. That's the kind of top of mind news today. But in the last 32 years, have Catholic bishops, especially on the very heels of Roe v. Wade, done everything they could possibly do to mitigate the effects of the Supreme Court ruling several decades ago? We're going to talk about that in the first 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Dr. Sue Abramidis will be our guest. Phyllis Schlafly joins us after an hour of open lines at 3:30. Now, during that hour of open lines, a couple things I'd like to address. First of all, I didn't get to something yesterday because our open line subjects ran a little long. I want to talk about the thoughts that continue to swirl in my mind and break like waves upon the shore of my brain all last week when I was on a cruise with the family. And while I was enjoying myself immensely and having a good time and relaxing as much as you can relax on a cruise ship, in fact, that was really what brought it to mind, the fact that it was so busy on the cruise ship all the time. Busy, 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 happy, happy, happy. Every time the cruise director walked out on the stage to introduce the night's show, he said three things. He said, "Do you feel good? Say yes. Having a good time? Say yes. Enjoying yourself? Say yes." We couldn't say no. A couple of those nights, I felt a little woozy. The ship was tossing around. I felt tired due to too much food and one too many Dramamine. But you had to say yes. Enforced happiness. Now, it was a happy time. It really was. Good to see the family and spend a week with them. But it struck me that the average seeker-sensitive congregation has become an awful lot like a cruise ship. We'll talk about that during open lines. Also, I want to know whether you think the president is doing the right thing, has done the right thing, on this whole issue of his previous drug use and his refusal to go into any details or really to even explicitly admit that he used cocaine and marijuana. We'll talk about that during open lines that hour starting at 3:30. At 4:30, Phyllis Schlafly will be our guest of Eagle Forum. Two subjects to deal with her. Maureen Dowd's column today in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on feminism and what are called slump busters. Also, the recent statements made by Harvard President Lawrence Summers on the aptitude of women in math and science. Karen Malik will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Two issues with her. She's from the Coalition on Abortion and Breast Cancer. A court's first judgment in history against an abortion clinic and a physician for failing to inform a 15-year-old girl, she's now 19, about the risks of breast cancer and psychological harm due to abortion. And the other subject, a large donation from a breast cancer organization to Planned Parenthood. What's going on here? Rita Marker will be our guest after that. We'll talk with her about Terry Schindler Schiavo, of course, much in the news. The Supreme Court announced today they're also here a challenge to Oregon's Death with Dignity Act, otherwise known as assisted suicide, and an assisted suicide bill in California as well. Rita Marker will be our guest of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. That's the lineup for today's Issues, Etc. Those are the subjects and the guests. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Sue Abramidis is our guest. She is professor of English at Loyola College in Baltimore, Maryland, and author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled "Triple Bypass, Rhetorical Evasions of the Pro-Life Imperative." Dr. Abramidis, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you so much.
Immediately after Roe v. Wade 32 years ago and in the intervening three decades, have Catholic bishops done everything they could do as bishops to respond to that Supreme Court decision?
Absolutely not. There's been an amazing distance between what they ought to do and what they have done. I think that all we need do is look at the various politicians who label themselves, when convenient, Catholic, who nonetheless vote to finance and further and enable abortions, and at the same time still present themselves for the sacraments in the church.
So would you draw a direct line between that crisis for the bishops of discipline in the church and their own inactivity up to and including the time of Roe v. Wade?
Well, yeah, before Roe v. Wade, as people my age remember, there were different initiatives in different states to legalize abortion. Some of them were defeated, some of them were successful. New York, for example, was successful. And the bishops at that time took very strong stands against abortion, and I really believe thought that that was enough. But by 1973, when Roe v. Wade was decreed, and like most people who are amateur observers of the law, plus those people who are really professionals in the law, that has to be one of the worst decisions the court ever made from a legal point of view. I think the bishops were paralyzed. I think not all of them, thank God, but there was a paralysis that set in for a variety of reasons. They didn't want to be seen as partisan. They used the word pastoral as if that somehow covered everything. And, you know, given the desire, and a right desire, not to seem as if the church is trying to initiate a theocracy in the United States, they just went overboard. You know, there's nothing at all interfering with the free exercise of government in the United States by Catholic bishops telling Catholics who are politicians, vote the way you want to vote, but if you vote that way, you no longer are part of the communion of the church. That doesn't seem to me to be a hard thing. I mean, it is a hard thing to say, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't seem to me to be in any way an outrage against the notion of the separation of church and state.
What is the pro-life imperative?
The pro-life imperative is that innocent human life, from the moment of conception until the moment of natural death, must be protected. It must not be violated. And that means that such things as euthanasia, cloning, fetal experimentation, and, of course, the primary thing, abortion, that these are abhorrent to God. And the pro-life imperative is that we not only react negatively to any attempts to further those things, but we react positively as a people, as a country, as members of different churches. We create environments in which keeping life sacred is natural. It's the right thing to do.
So how should pro-lifers in general, and Catholic pro-lifers in particular, how should they hear and respond to prominent Roman Catholics or other politicians who say, look, on the abortion issue, I am personally opposed, but I don't want to legislate my morality, or I don't think it's my place to go this direction, or the kind of Mario Cuomo direction, which is, I think the best way is not to legislate against it, but kind of change hearts gradually. How should they hear that and react to it?
Well, I would hope they would hear it and react to it the way I do. In my article, I talked about the mantra and the metaphor. The mantra being, I'm personally opposed, but, and the metaphor being the seamless garment. The notion that you can be personally opposed to something but publicly for it is baloney. That's like saying, I'm personally opposed to slavery, but if you want to own a slave, that's okay because I don't want to interfere with your rights. You know, it's amazing when we change what the noun is there, how suddenly the vacuity, the emptiness, the stupidity of that position is. How should Catholics hear it? Well, I think Catholics should hear it. It's funny. Practicing Catholics do hear it. As you well know, anybody can call himself an Episcopalian or an evangelical or a Catholic or anything else. The key word is practicing, believing. Practicing Catholics, I think, indeed do hear the hypocrisy of prominent politicians who will be personally opposed. I mean, I love the one about rare and all the rest of it that it has been enunciated. There's nothing rare or merciful about abortion. A baby dies. It's that simple. And the mother loses something serious, too.
And what is this metaphor, seamless garment metaphor?
Well, that came out of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Cardinal Bernardin, of late memory, was attempting to say that, you know, a Catholic position is always pro-life. Right. And he put together, as if they were all of the same ilk, abortion and euthanasia, which are always, per se, evil, always. He put them together with things that involve prudential judgments about whether they should be implemented or applied, like capital punishment, war, poverty. There's nobody who's for any of those things. But there might be people who say, well, this program to alleviate poverty just doesn't work. Well, then you can have a politician say, well, I voted to abolish poverty. Well, I can vote to abolish cancer, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I voted to abolish poverty, and therefore I'm more right to life than this man who didn't. Well, when you put together ideas as if they were of equivalent nature or equivalent importance, you're slovenly. And the kind of slovenly thinking and moral theology that we have behind the seamless garment has been particularly pernicious because it provides cover for Catholic politicians to support and make possible and make easy abortion.
It's not even really an honest representation of the teaching of the Church, which seems to be rather unequivocal on this, that there is not an exact moral equivalence between abortion and, although there are positions, there's not an exact moral equivalence between abortion and capital punishment or the other issues here.
Absolutely, there isn't. You know, capital punishment is a very tricky issue. The Catechism of the Catholic Church acknowledges that both St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas, and indeed one need only think of the Bible, support the idea of capital punishment in appropriate cases. Now, the position of the Holy Father in some of his letters, and a very understandable position when one thinks of his background, is that that truly should be rare, and only when there is no other means of controlling the criminal or protecting society. And the reason I mention his background is, of course, he was on a hit list of the Gestapo during the Second World War, and no sooner was Poland, quote, freed, end quote, by our friends from Eastern Europe, when he became on the hit list of the communists. So, you know, he's a man who's lived in societies of death, and therefore I think he's a man who is saying anything that gives death is something that is needful of examination to make sure that we're not talking murder, we're talking killing, and there is a difference between the two.
We're talking about Roman Catholic bishops and pro-choice legislators and voters with Dr. Sue Abramidis. She's professor of English at Loyola College in Baltimore, Maryland, and author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Triple Bypass, Rhetorical Evasions of the Pro-Life Imperative. If you have a question or a comment, our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You talk about the methods of the last 30 years, and you describe the separationist and interventionist positions, and then we'll get to a third here that's more common nowadays. Describe those two methods of the last 30 years after Roe v. Wade.
Well, the interventionist would be the kind of bishop that I really support and am grateful for and thank God for. This is the man who says, if you are going to support abortion, then you are no longer in communion with the Church. And that has a real meaning. It's serious. It's not light. The separationist is the one who supports the idea that abortion is just another issue, and we deal with it as a whole picture, and we don't tell somebody he can or can't go to communion. The interventionist manifested himself years ago down in New Orleans when a prominent segregationist was denied a Catholic burial because he had been an unavowed hater of African-American citizens. And that was a public sin. It was scandal. That's the issue, scandal. You know, somebody like, well, I better not mention any politicians' names, but say a late candidate for president who presents himself for communion in an archdiocese and receives it, that, to me, is a scandal because his public position is scandalous. He never voted against one pro-abortion bill. You know, that we're talking about politicians who can't even hide under the thin gossamer veil of, well, I really don't believe in abortion, but it's necessary. Partial birth abortion, for example, is never necessary. The American Medical Association, which is hardly, unfortunately, pro-life, has acknowledged there is no medical reason for a partial birth abortion, none. And yet, you'll have Catholic politicians, many of whom have had Catholic educations, who will vote to preserve that right under Roe v. Wade.
Now, you mentioned something before we get to what you're calling the transformationist position. While we're talking about the separationists a bit, You said that there's a term that's used often, misused, that is pastoral.
Ugh.
In my own church body is also misused. It generally is used to kind of say, well, we know what Scripture says, we know what the church teaches, but here's our kind of blanket by which we make exceptions to almost everything, and it usually ends in kind of a cowardly lack of church discipline. We are exercising pastoral discretion, or we're being pastoral.
I couldn't put it better. I think it's interesting that blanket and bland begin with the same phoneme, syllable. You know, there's something incredibly and of course, all I can think of are Christ's terrible words. You know, I would have you hot or cold, but if you're tepid, I'll vomit you out.
Tell us about the Transformationist.
Well, the Transformationist, that's the third cover. That's joining the personally opposed and the notion of the garment. The Transformationists believe that you win over a politician. And they believe that it's the same kind of thing you just described about the pastoral, that we move heart by heart. Now, I do believe that finally, in God's lights, in God's time, misusing that word, that, yeah, the conversion of hearts is what it's all about. Christ does that for us if we say yes to him. But the Transformationists, with their belief that members of the laity have competence to judge in their own sphere, they certainly don't believe that when it comes to all kinds of major social issues. Why do they believe it when it comes to something which is absolutely against the law of God? I don't understand it. They argue that the public statements of the moral teachings of the church violate the need for dialogue. Well, I'm not going to sit down and dialogue with somebody who believes in incest. And I'm not going to sit down and dialogue with somebody who believes in parricide. So why would I sit down and dialogue with somebody who believes in killing babies in the womb? Or who believes that cloning babies in order to bring out parts or get the right gifts or any of the other things they're talking about, that this is the right thing to do? Or that, you know, somebody's old or somebody's deformed or somebody has ALS or the rest of it, their lives have no utility, so we mercifully put them out of their misery. You know, I'm not going to dialogue with people like that.
Where would groups like Catholics for Choice fall?
Well, they aren't. Now, I will give bishops credit for this. They have been insisting over and over again to the media, and we all know how we can trust them, that Catholics for Choice, that organization, is not Catholic. It is not affiliated with the church at all in any way. That we had a Catholics for Choice person talk here on campus a couple of years ago. Hasn't happened since. And I remember sitting in the audience, and when you're a woman professor, everybody figures, well, you know, you're going to be one of us. So after she finished her speech, in which she announced that Thomas Aquinas did not believe that abortion was wrong, that he talked about quickening and all the rest, I kind of raised my hand and was sheer Holy Spirit. I mean this. That afternoon, I just happened, by hapstance, not by plan, to read Thomas on abortion. I don't know why I did. In which point, he did have different biological information from what we have and believed in quickening of male and female souls at different times. But he said from the very beginning, it is a mortal sin, a serious sin, to abort a baby. And so the woman lied. And she lied in front of these kids. And, of course, I embarrassed everybody because I pointed that out, because what we have is a bunch of people with, you know, hard hearts and soft heads.
Is that what it comes down to in many cases? I'm thinking about these bishops, some of whom are the interventionist and courageous, or I think of St. Louis's own newly installed Archbishop Raymond Burke.
He's wonderful.
Who is apparently not going to back down regardless of what kind of press he gets.
Absolutely.
But I'm thinking, well, we don't want to hurt feelings. We don't want to hurt our cash flow. It seems to have gone so far at this point that some of the more bureaucratic among the Catholic bishops are saying, we can't turn back. We can't do what we probably should have done 30 years ago and speak up because we have too many mass-going Catholics who are voting pro-choice with their eyes wide open.
But actually, statistically, mass-going Catholics don't tend to vote pro-choice. When they talk about the even split with Catholics in terms of pro-choice, or as I like to call it, pro-abortion and pro-life, when you get to who goes to church regularly, the numbers change radically to something like 87% vote pro-life. So, it, you know, it all depends on how you ask a question. It all depends on how you present the information. He's not alone. And the other thing to keep in mind is if you look at the young crop of bishops coming up, these are men of faith. They are bishops not for the perks. They're not going to in any way soften needlessly. I mean, compassion, absolutely. I feel nothing but compassion for the young women who will come to me and say, I did this, and now what do I do? I try to send them to Rachel. I try to send them to all kinds of organizations. If they come in pregnant, we have all kinds of things that we send them to. And absolute compassion. There's no doubt about that. But it's not compassion to tell the comfortable that it's okay to sin. And that's exactly what's been going on. If to me, Archbishop Burke is one of the leaders. Cardinal Chaput is, or he's still Archbishop Chaput. Cardinal George, I'm hoping, is. There are cardinals and bishops out there who know that in the final moment of life, Christ is going to look into each one of their eyes and say, did you love me? Did you feed my lambs? Did you feed my sheep? And that, I think, is going to be, that's going to be the moment of truth. It's a little late at that point, but I think a lot of people are beginning to think about that as the moment of truth. I do.
Two quick final questions.
Sure.
Some people would say, look, why doesn't the Pope just sign his name to an edict that says, all you guys are out, I'm going to take this into my own hands? That would kind of solve the problem. Do you agree?
Well, no, because, you know, of course we are, some people use the word bureaucratic, I would use the word hierarchical. There are many prudent judgments made. I think there were some bad appointments of bishops made on with good intentions and with the best information at the time. I think Rome's attitude to the United States is a very interesting one. It's looking at Africa, it's looking at Asia, where Christianity is just springing up all over the place, and I think it sees us the way it sees Western Europe. We're not as bad as Western Europe, but we are in many ways in decline. At the same time, it's encouraging to me that the young bishops that Rome is appointing are really men of faith. They're men of intelligence. They're men with appropriate ecumenical outreach. They're men who care about Christ and his people.
And finally, with only about 15 seconds here, what should the bishops or future bishops, as you seem to hope, what should they do? Only 15 seconds.
They just should say your public life and your private life are not separable. If in public you give scandal, in private you don't go to communion.
Dr. Sue Abramidis has been our guest. She's professor of English at Loyola College in Baltimore, Maryland, and authored this excellent article. I recommend you do read it. TouchstoneMag.com is the website for Touchstone Magazine. The article is titled Triple Bypass Rhetorical Evasions of the Pro-Life Imperative. Dr. Abramidis, thank you for being our guest.
Well, thank you for having me.
When we come back, it's open lines for your questions and your comments. One of the things we're going to be hearing from right away when we come back on this issue of the president's past drug use, marijuana and cocaine, allegedly. He has been close-lipped. He has refused to answer questions. His rationale is, and this is now out on tape, of course, you've heard the news from a guy named Douglas Weed. He does not want to see young people emulating his past bad behavior. Is that good enough for you? In an age when politicians of necessity need to come clean on just about everything they've ever done, the president has never said he didn't use drugs, but he hasn't exactly said that he did either. We'll hear from Doug Weed when we come back in Open Lines. Other things follow, too.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In the Old Testament book of Joshua, God commands Joshua and the armies of Israel to completely drive out and destroy their Canaanite enemies. How can a God of love demand war and killing? You'll find an answer to this question in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. The book is $42.99 plus shipping and handling. Visit our website, issuesetc.org, for more information on the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. Or order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Call any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. The website address again, issuesetc.org, or
1-800-325-3040. Boys and girls living under bridges, on sidewalks, and near mountains of trash are common sights in the Philippines. This Global Minute lets you hear how Christians are joining together and changing the lives of these children. Jeff Anderson with Action International Ministries has spent a large part of his missionary career caring for street children in Manila, capital of the Philippines. He helped in connecting a large number of Filipino churches so a team of believers could share Christ's love and offer job training and schooling.
This is the largest number in Southeast Asia. In our city, Metro Manila, conservatively speaking, there would be 75,000. And that number is growing every day.
Pray for street children in the Philippines to find Christ. Learn what you can do. Visit the website actionintl.org. It's a resource for you and your church. That's actionintl.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Oh, this is just too good. Sharing birthdays today are Senator Bill Frist and Senator Edward Kennedy. Providence is a name sometimes used for God, a name reminding us that God looks ahead, farther ahead than we can. Did God play a practical joke by causing these political opponents to share the same birthday? Do we learn from the coincidences of life? Turn on TV and see former Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton urging Americans to get together behind tsunami relief efforts. The odd couple, Bush said, old political enemies now working together. No, I don't think these are practical jokes from God, but moments of insight, if only we will use them that way. Isaiah 40 says, all men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God stands forever. Belated birthday greetings to Representatives John Shimkus, John Lewis, Charles Bustani, and to Senator Olympia Snow, who celebrated their birthdays yesterday, both sides of the aisle. Next time you are going to skew someone, a politician, a boss, your enemy, remember Providence looks ahead and may well cast you and your mortal enemy together.
Issues Etc. is underwritten in part locally by Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois. Christ Our Savior is located at 612 North State Street in Freeburg. The Reverend Bruce Kaseman is the pastor. Their phone number, area code 618-539-5664. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, an Issues Etc. underwriter on AM 850 KFUO. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., St. Polycarp will discuss that New Testament saint, we can call him. Pastor Will Whedon of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois, will be our guest tomorrow on the program to talk about Polycarp. Not a small name, by the way. Easy to remember, because it's so unusual. There's so much more about him we need to know, and we'll be talking about that. It's open lines for the next hour. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Following an hour of open lines, Phyllis Schlafly will be our guest. We're going to have her reaction to Maureen Dowd's column in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch on feminism and some recent statements made by Harvard President Lawrence Summers on the aptitude of women versus men in science and math. Phyllis will be our guest. Karen Malik will be our guest to talk about the very first court judgment that's been made against an abortion clinic and a physician or an abortionist for failing to inform a 15-year-old girl about two things. First of all, the psychological damage of abortion, but more to the point with Karen Malik, the increased risk of breast cancer due to abortion. We'll also talk about a large donation from a breast cancer organization that was made to Planned Parenthood. Karen will join us for that as well. Rita Marker will be our guest in the last half hour of the program from the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. You can probably guess what we'll be talking with her about. First, we'll have some audio from the lawyer, Fellows is his name, for Michael Schiavo, the guardian of Terry Schindler Schiavo, who tomorrow, I think at 1 o'clock, at least according to the plans of the lawyer and Michael Schiavo, her guardian, will have her feeding tube removed for, I think, the second or the third time. We'll be talking about that with Rita Marker. Also, the Supreme Court announced today they're going to hear a challenge to Oregon's Death with Dignity Act. It has to do with physician-assisted suicide. There's also a California bill on assisted suicide that we'll talk about with Rita Marker in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. All female guests today. We didn't plan it that way. It just happened to work out that way. And I'll tell you what, based upon last half hour's conversation, while Lawrence Summers may think women don't have an aptitude for math or science, and, you know, I might agree based upon just anecdotal experience, but they certainly have aptitudes in other directions. There's no two ways about that. Okay, two things during Open Lines, and of course Open Lines is always anything you want to talk about as well, but I've got two things I'd like to discuss. One of them I didn't get to, and I'll get to it a little bit later. It has to do with my experience and my thoughts and my musings during a recent vacation on a cruise ship, and I could not help but think and feel, in many cases, like I was in a seeker-sensitive congregation. And I was just thinking of some striking parallels. I'll share some of them with you. One of them is a pastor and cruise director. I think we've talked about how the church growth model and the seeker-sensitive model of church growth turns the pastor into a CEO or a therapist or a coach. I think I found one that rolls them all into one. Cruise director. Who was the cruise director on Love Boat? That cute little blonde woman. What was her name? Julie? My wife would know. She used to watch Love Boat. No, the pastor's not Captain Steubing. No, no, no. Not driving the ship. Someone is driving the ship. When we were on the boat, we didn't see the captain until we debarked. And there he was. Bye-bye, bye-bye. I don't think he spoke English. I don't think anybody spoke English except for the cruise director. Now, he was really something. He was everywhere. He was friendly. He kept us busy. And he did his best to cater to our every whim and keep us happy. Whenever he asked us how we were doing, how are you doing? Feeling good? Say yes. Can I say no? Apparently not. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, first of all, the big news concerning the White House, except for the president's trip to Europe, has been the tapes that have been recently released, tapes made by a Douglas Weed, concerning then-Governor Bush's strategy for dealing with two issues. Now, this is what's made the news. I'm certain there's more in there. But two issues that eventually came to ahead in the president's political career in both his run for the presidency and his first term. First, let's listen to Doug Weed. This is a former aide to George W. Bush's father and then Texas Governor George W. Bush in a secretly recorded conversation. It's a little bit iffy, so listen carefully. It's about, this one is Douglas Weed and then Governor Bush talking about his stance on homosexuals.
He's saying that you promised you would not appoint gays to office.
No, what I said was I wouldn't fire gays. I'm not going to discriminate against people.
Okay, that's the one that kind of leads because it is the one that bleeds. It's the one that has the most controversy. What is the president saying? President who has had the religious right. And of late, gay marriage, very much on his plate. What was he saying then as governor about his stance toward gays? No, it's not that I wouldn't appoint them. I might appoint them. I won't fire them. Now, he went on to talk about how he wouldn't fire them based upon the fact that he also is guilty of sin, and so he cannot differentiate sins there as president. Now, that's just the one that's making the headlines. The other one that's also making the headlines, but usually following up on that one, has to do with the president's past drug use. No one has any doubt that the president has used illicit drugs in the past, and he's admitted to having an alcohol problem earlier in life. He is now clean and sober. There's no reason to believe otherwise. Well, here's a bit of the excerpt from the secretly made tapes from Douglas Weed. This is Weed and George W. Bush, then governor of Texas, discussing the question of his cocaine use.
I think it's time for somebody to just draw the line and look people in the eye and say, you know, I am not going to participate in ugly rumors about me and blame my opponents and hold the line and stand up for a system that will not allow this kind of crap to go on.
All right, that's the president laying out a strategy before he was running for president that he eventually used. And in retrospect, he used it successfully, at least in terms of the politics. When his drug use became an issue in the first presidential campaign, he said almost precisely what he said there. I'm not going to participate in ugly rumors about myself. And he laid it at the doorsteps of his opponents. Now, I've looked around in the last 24 hours to see whether the president has admitted to using cocaine and marijuana. He has not denied using cocaine and marijuana. He certainly has gone into absolutely no detail whatsoever. And his answer has been, as far as I can tell, and I might be unaware of something, his answer has been, in his public statements, exactly what you just heard. I'm not going to participate in ugly rumors about myself. He neither affirms nor denies drug use. And there's a rationale behind this, by the way. There's a rationale that he has had in place apparently for several years, too. Now, my question for you is this, and we'll hear another bite from the president, a little harder to hear. Is he doing the right thing? I'm not asking if he's doing the politically expedient thing. Now, this is what we always run into whenever we talk about politicians. Well, he has to do this because he's president. Okay, fine. Maybe he has to do it because he's president or he's running for president. But let's just ask the question. I think it's relevant. Is this the right thing for the president or anyone running for public office to do when it comes to past illegal activity? Being an alcoholic is not illegal. He's been more upfront about his alcohol abuse. But using cocaine and marijuana, the last time I checked, is illegal. He neither affirms, confirms nor denies that he's done it. He doesn't, well, here's his rationale. Doug Weed, again, in a conversation recorded about the president's previous marijuana use.
You want your little kid to say, hey, Daddy, President Bush tried marijuana, I think I will.
No, I don't.
You don't want that, do you?
No, I don't want it.
Well, that's the message we've been sending out. I wouldn't answer the marijuana question.
And that's why he won't answer the marijuana or the cocaine question. His rationale is he doesn't want little children to emulate the president. I don't want my children emulating his past drug abuse. I agree with him there. It might be a rationalization. He won't answer the question. See, that's the whole point. And he's been consistent about this. You got to give, I mean, George W. Bush, you may fault him for many things. It's unbelievably consistent. I mean, when he decides on a strategy like this, he apparently follows through. He has not answered the question. Now, let's just put it in terms of mom and dad. The kid comes home. We had our D.A.R.E. program in school today. Mom, dad, have you ever used marijuana? Would you take the George W. Bush strategy? I am neither going to confirm nor deny anything about marijuana because I don't want to encourage you to do the same. I won't go into any details. I won't answer the question. Now, I've heard arguments made that when politicians do admit to these kind of things, it might encourage people to follow their example. Although people seem to be following their example without any encouragement at all. Do you think he's doing the right thing? I'm going to open up the phone lines for your answers to that question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. For the next hour, open lines, issues, etc. Do you think the president is doing the right thing? Now, this has come to light because of a book deal, and it's come to light because of these secret tapes. And tapes are always fascinating to us because we're peering into the private conversations. And the White House has said nothing about this except these were private conversations with private individuals, and we're not going to talk about them. Again, that's a consistent response. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Open lines this Tuesday, February the 22nd. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. No one can deny that this strategy, this tactic on the previous drug use question has worked for the president. It's worked as well as we can't know what would have worked if he would have come clean or admitted to things or gone into details. He might have perpetuated the story. Might have given it more legs than it already had. It's worked politically. Does it work with you? Does it pass the... What kind of test would it be? It's not the yuck test. It's Does it pass the ethical test with you? Ethics is it's kind of an odd thing. Legal for him to refuse to answer this? Of course it is. He's not breaking the law by refusing to answer it. Is it politically expedient? It apparently is. And look, I'm not going to blame a politician for doing what's politically expedient. It's kind of what we elect them to do most of the time. But this is my question for you. Is he doing the right thing? The thing that passes the conscience test. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from both sides on this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think that the president should simply come clean and say, yes, here are my details, and these are all the details I'll give you. I did use marijuana. I did use cocaine. And then the headline would read, president finally admits to past drug use. And without any other details to go on, people will say, well, we kind of knew that already, didn't we? Even though he's never explicitly admitted it or denied it. Didn't we already kind of know that? Do you agree with this strategy of not answering the question? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Maybe you say, it's no one's business. Yeah, he might have been governor at the time or co-owner and owner-manager of the Rangers or whatever at the time, a businessman at the time, but it's no longer relevant because at no time during his run for presidency, during his services presidency, in this or the last term, has he been using marijuana or cocaine? So it's no one's business what he did in the past. Would you have afforded the same latitude to the previous, not the in office, but the previous dalliances of our previous president a term ago, President Bill Clinton? I am not asking you a trick question, folks. This is not a trick question. I just want your feedback on this issue. And you know why I asked the question? I'll be quite honest with you. I asked the question because I'm wondering myself whether the president is doing the right thing, whether this passes the conscience test. It certainly passes the politics test. It certainly passes the keeping the press story and killing the press story as soon as you can test. It's a brilliant strategy. It's simple. It's elegant. It works. Is it right? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Is it a strategy you would employ with your own kids if the question came to you? Not a press conference. Not a reporter. Just your kids coming home from school saying, Mom, Dad, tell me, have you ever used marijuana?